This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Yes, sir, we're off and rolling. Midweek, Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. That is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. And executive producer is with me. That would be Connor Drumming on X at C99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
It's going great because I'm not a Cleveland Cavaliers fan.
Yeah, that was brutal last night.
Awful.
You're not Catholic either, or are you Catholic? I don't know.
I'm not Catholic.
Conclave
no.
Began today.
Conclave. I've seen the movie. I understand that reference.
I need to go back and watch. I haven't watched it.
The movie is incredible.
It rips, huh?
It's great.
It's basically about all the goings on, and also sort of the way that popes. These guys are trying to backdoor their way into being the pope.
It's basically about the politics that happen. Once a pope passes,
right,
and the cardinals get together and are sequestered,
it's dramatized, right? So we hope that what happens in conclave doesn't happen in real life.
There are parts of it that are dramatized, yes, but I think that the process that they show,
right,
is probably very accurate to what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, there's like, you know, movie stuff that happens in it.
Yep, for sure. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on overreaction, not an overreaction, in just a moment. NBA playoffs, Tyrese Halliburton last night. Oh, my God. You know what's crazy about what he did last night, Connor? Today is the 30th anniversary of Reggie Miller's 8 points in 8.9 seconds in MSG. Today is the 30th anniversary.
That's awesome.
That's wild. But we had another Pacers great do something unbelievable last night, and really everything went wrong for the Cavs down the stretch. Everything went right for the Pacers. We'll talk about all that. Steph Curry is injured, so that'll be worth discussing. The Warriors won game one, but can they win the series if Steph Curry can't give it a go with that hamstring injury? We have some federal intervention potentially for college athletics. President Trump likes being popular, so he's trying to create something for college athletics that's popular. And then shout out to the Cowboys, some NFL news. They said they were going to be selectively aggressive. I'd say they did that today. They went and got wide receiver George Pickens from the Steelers. As far as guests are concerned, Jim Turner, Showboat's head coach at 4:30. Three of the last four games will be at home in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. I know they're 1-5, but go out and support. See what they got. I know this is a project. This has been a project. For Fred Smith and everybody else here in Memphis, that they want it to work out. David Cobb at 5 o'clock from CBS Sports. And then 6 o'clock, we'll get to NBA playoffs. And also, I need to ask about Tomas Isolo from the outside looking in. Keith Smith will join from SpotTrack. And, of course, the front office show. We'll get to the Blitz after him. But let's go ahead and open up. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe, you
let's
referenced it earlier. This happened last night in Cavs, Pacers, Game 2.
Carlisle's going to let him play. Halliburton steps trying to take Cleveland's heart. And it is over. The wow. Indiana Pacers in a game two stunner.
The final was 120-119, and the Pacers take a 2-0 series lead. The Cavs have already lost the series. Overreaction? Not an overreaction.
Oh, God. Two games at home as the number one seed. All of these injuries. It's not an overreaction. You're going to go to Indiana. They have covered home court very, very well the last two playoffs. I just don't see it happening for the Cavs. But let's get into that game. The Cavs were resilient until they weren't. The fourth quarter, especially the last 5 minutes, I couldn't believe my eyes. I just couldn't believe it.
It was shocking.
They could barely inbound the ball. They couldn't get it over half court at times. You have Aaron Nesmith flying in off a free throw,
that killed him
for a putback dunk, and Donovan Mitchell about got killed on that play. Ty Jerome, who we called it, he was going to get in the starting lineup after the way game one went, but all of a sudden he's not playable, and they were hunting him. They were hunting him on the defensive end. He had 2 points, 1 for 14. If he's not giving you anything offensively, he's sure as hell not giving you anything defensively. I have some advice for Kenny Atkinson, though, for the Cavs. Don't take Donovan Mitchell off the floor. He needs to play 48 minutes. I know he's kind of banged up, and he gave it all last night, but when he was off the floor, Indiana won those minutes every single time. But he played possessed last night. I want to give credit where credit's due. That was probably the best Donovan Mitchell playoff performance I've seen. And he's had some really, really good ones. 48 points and 35 minutes. I hate that last night it was all for naught, but that in-game situation, Connor. Just the marbles, the cojones of Tyrese Haliburton to do what he did. 11 seconds. Down three, makes one of the free throws, misses one perfectly. He gets the rebound himself, dribbles it out like he's taking it back, in a one-on-one game. And
ball up top.
And takes a three when he didn't need to. He could have drove and tied the game, but he wanted to take it for the win. And honestly, I don't blame him for that because you're already up 1-0 in the series. You stole one on the road against the Cavs already. You're playing with house money to a certain extent, but the absolute balls on that guy to go do what he did. This is the stat that is just mind-blowing. Since 1997-98, that season, teams are 3-1,640 when trailing by 7-plus in the final minute of the fourth quarter or overtime. The Pacers, this postseason, in the last three games, have two of those wins. They did it in Game 5 against the Bucks, and they did it in Game 2 against the Cavs. How in the world have they been able to execute as well as they have down the stretch of these playoff games and handle business? Tyrese Haliburton, it's really fun to watch him before our eyes have his moment. He's not lighting up the scoreboard, only had 19 last night, but he's really good at setting up his teammates.
No turnovers.
And he is as clutch in these playoffs as any player. We talk about Jalen Brunson all the time. Tyrese Haliburton, with those two game winners, has been phenomenal. But to the Cavs, DeAndre Hunter has a thumb injury. Evan Mobley has an ankle injury. And Darius Garland has a toe. And you're down 2-0. You lost home court advantage pretty handily. I don't know if it'll be a sweep. Maybe the Cavs can win a couple of games, but it feels like this series is over for all intents and purposes. It feels like the Pacers are going to run away, ultimately win this series. Even if the Cavs are at full strength, I think the Pacers have the horses to go win. So they stole two already. And it just feels like it's a losing battle for the Cleveland Cavaliers, who had a hell of a season.
Hell of a season. And it's brutal that injuries are the reason they're in this position, because I do think if they were fully healthy, they'd be giving the Pacers more of a punch. But last night was devastating to watch. I could not believe it. That Nesmith put back over Donovan Mitchell, that was the moment where I was at Jack Brown's playing trivia. Shout out Isaiah. Just shout out everybody that plays trivia at Jack Brown's. And when that happened, there were, because some people were playing trivia, and like some of us were watching the game, and everybody in Jack Brown's was, whoa!
And that was where you started to believe that it could happen.
No, it was that moment where, you know, we talked about it yesterday. The thing about the Pacers, and the reason the Celtics talk about them like they're boogeymen, even though they've had success against them in the playoffs, they don't die. They never stop coming. They never stop. You cannot put them away. They are going to give you full effort until that final buzzer. And that is why, in two of their last three games, they have had these historic comebacks. Because they will never give up. They're going to execute. They do not turn the ball over at a high rate in the fourth quarter in those situations. And they just have guys that can make shots and make timely shots. And that's what they were doing. They really locked down on defense. Their defense last night in the fourth quarter was unreal. They out-efforted the Cleveland Cavaliers. And Donovan Mitchell deserves all the credit in the world. We said yesterday on the show, if this guy could take 30 shots but do it efficiently, they'll have a chance to win the game. And guess what? He shot 50% from the field, got to the free throw line like it was his job, and he still could do it. It was not Donovan Mitchell's fault they lost that game by any means. The rest of his team, outside of just a few guys, a handful of guys, Max Strus showed up, Jared Allen showed up, everybody else forgot how to play basketball on the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. Most importantly, Dean Wade got his just got destroyed when he was out there. And then Ty Jerome looked like he had never played basketball before. Yep. The lights were too bright for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't want to say the series is over, but if they can't get those three guys back, I cannot see them being able to beat the Pacers, because last night it took a 48-point performance and Donovan Mitchell shooting 50% from the field to even be in that basketball game, to have a chance to win it. Can he do that again? He's a great playoff performer, but can he do it at that efficiency again?
Especially with how tired he looked at the end of that game.
And just beat to hell.
Yeah.
They were beating the crap out of him because he was the only guy that had the basketball in his hands the whole time.
I hate my mind went here as soon as I saw that shot go in from Tyrese, though. You know who I thought about as soon as Tyrese nailed that? John Halliburton, his dad, who is no longer at these games because he is banned. He is banned for the quote-unquote foreseeable future. I feel, you know, hey, he wasted his celebration on Giannis. That was an easy layup. That one last night, going as crazy as he did, I don't advocate for it, but what he did to Giannis, it would have been better last night. That was the one he should have been celebrating.
He would have been screaming in Donovan Mitchell. He would have been like, woo! Right in Donovan Mitchell's face the entire time.
And, I mean, here's the truth. The Pacers are they really just have a good team, man. They're just good. Aaron Nesmith, 23 points. Miles Turner, 23 points. I think he is severely underrated as a big. Benedict Mathurin had 19. He about outdid the Cavs bench by himself with those 19 points, because the Cavs ended up having, I think, 21. He had 19 by himself off the bench. And for Tyrese Halliburton, I do want to give him some credit. This was the same guy that was voted most overrated player in the NBA less than a month ago from an anonymous poll from NBA players. NBA players voted him this way in the Athletic. So he's trying to prove people wrong, and he's doing it game by game by game. And this Pacers team is doing it game by game by game.
It is. I can't remember which account said it, but it's one of those famous NBA accounts. And he said that the reason Tyrese Halliburton got voted most overrated is he's the most annoying player to get your ass busted by.
Yep.
And that's probably why.
Talks trash back and forth.
I mean,
yeah.
And his celebration was perfect. It was amazing. I like that he acknowledged the marbles.
Right.
And I like that he acknowledged it in the post-game presser. He acknowledged, is that overrated? No, he has shown up in the playoffs. He's shown up in the playoffs before. And the Pacers, they were one of those teams that I think got overlooked because they're not flashy. Mm-hmm. They don't have flashy players.
And they don't have like the superstar level caliber MVP, all-NBA guys.
But every single one of their guys in their rotation is somebody that you take on your team.
Yeah, Obi Toppin.
Absolutely. Obi Toppin. I mean, even, Thomas Bryant went in there and gave them some pretty good minutes. And, TJ McConnell's been doing it forever. Benedict Mathurin's been doing it for a while now. He went in there, gave them some really good minutes when they needed him to, played some great defense. And then Nembhard and Nesmith,
great.
Those two guys being in their lineup and coming and blossoming into Indiana has been a fun story in the NBA that isn't being talked about enough. And then we talk about them. Pascal Siakam still doing his thing. He wasn't huge last night, but again, it's these timely buckets, that layup that he hit that brought them back within, I think, like a couple
Pascal
of points.
Pascal, to me, is one of the more underrated players in the National Basketball
Association. Well, his defense is important.
That's what I'm saying. He's a two-way guy, and he can just he can do it at a very high level. We saw it when he was with the Raptors, and he's doing it with the Pacers. Obviously, he's got a lesser role on the offensive end, but he can still pop off for 30 any given night. So that team's very good. And to answer the original prompt and question, have the Cavs already lost this series? I don't think that's an overreaction. I think that the Cavs are just about cooked, unless they get all these guys healthy and you know, win these next two games. But it just doesn't seem like that's very likely.
Next up, Jokic is the real MVP. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
We've done this one before, but it's not an overreaction. And I'm not even just saying that because of his playoff performance and the game one win that the Nuggets had against the 68 win Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm saying that because of what he did in the regular season and how just truly irreplaceable he is on that team. The pace that he plays with, the amount of guys he throws open, what he does to just keep that team in the fight. And right now, since Michael Malone's been fired, you saw in game one, he's over there charging up the team, coaching them, drawing out of bounds plays, telling them about spacing. David Adelman talked about it in the postgame presser because he got the board out and he was writing on it. David Adelman said basically he was trying to teach the team about post spacing. And his team is listening and they're doing a hell of a job at following his lead. And when you look at his stats during the regular season, I know SGA was the point king and he's likely going to win MVP, but Jokic was top three in points, top three in rebounds, top three in assists, top three in steals, while shooting top 10 percentages in field goal percentage altogether and top 10 percentage in 3 points, three-pointers. I love SGA. I respect the hell out of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He is phenomenal. But when we talk about a full team and what's around Jokic versus what's around SGA, I don't even think there's much of a debate. We're talking about valuable. And SGA's valuable. Don't get me wrong. You wouldn't be in the conversation if he wasn't. But when we talk about irreplaceable, Nikola Jokic, if he's not on that Nuggets team, they're play-in, maybe out of the playoffs altogether in this Western Conference. And I know that this conversation is going to heat up because we're watching these two battle for seven games in round two of the NBA playoffs. But I've always stood on this side. I think Jokic, I know people get tired of him winning just about every year, but he deserves it more than Shai. And I've said that time and time again as this season's gone along.
Yeah, it's not about I'm not going to tear down SGA to build up Jokic because I think SGA had a phenomenal season. And any other year, I think SGA would be running away with it. That's why we've compared it to the Heisman race this season a lot. Like, you had Ashton Jeanty having a historic season, and then you had Travis Hunter
didn't
doing
exist.
Things.
Ashton Jeanty runs away with it.
Exactly, and that's why I understand why SGA is going to win it. I get it. I'm not going to necessarily, like, say there's a reason he shouldn't win it. I just think that Jokic is the definition of the most valuable player in the NBA. We saw it during the regular season. You're seeing it in the playoffs. Yes, I understand that the MVP is not a playoff award. I get it. It's a regular season award. But when you look at the regular season, Jokic did something that we had never seen before. Him being top five in every single counting stat. He averaged a triple-double. He's the reason that team made it to the playoffs. He's the reason that team was the seed they are in the playoffs. He means, in my opinion, more to the Denver Nuggets than SGA means to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I do think that the Thunder's success is one of the reasons SGA is going to win. They won 68 games. I get that. That's also a historic stat. So that's why SGA is going to win. He was the best scorer on the best team that had a historic season. They were the number one seed. I get it. And I also think that part of it is people got bored of giving it to Jokic.
Yep.
It happened to Michael Jordan. It happened to Kobe. And hope it happened to LeBron. Yep. We have seen it over and over and over again in the NBA. People just get bored giving the same guy MVP every year. Jordan should have had an MVP damn near every single season he was in the league. LeBron should have had an MVP damn near every single season he was in the league. But no, people got bored and they wanted to give it to somebody else. And that's why heading into this season, We were like, Jokic is the best player in the world. Everybody can agree on that. Whose turn is it to win the MVP, though? That's why, like, a lot of people thought Luka may win it. People thought SGA may win it. But it was turn. Whose turn is it to win now? And that's where it can get annoying when you talk about MVP. Because when you look at the stats, when you look about who was actually valuable to their team, you cannot make an argument, in my opinion, for someone being more valuable to their team than Nikola Jokic is to the Denver Nuggets. There is no argument that's better than him.
And to be honest, in the playoffs right now, like he's the lone just like superstar that just changes the fortunes for his entire franchise. He's the one. He is the one. And I know this is an abstract thought, and you have to watch the games and you have to use your eyes to really see what I'm talking about. And doesn't really rely on stats. Even though he puts up a lot, he puts up a lot of stats. When I watch the Denver Nuggets, Jokic pops because he does everything. He sets up everything. He is just like this, you know, everything on the offensive end is centered around what Nikola Jokic is going to do. How is he going to play each and every possession? When I watch the Oklahoma City Thunder, I don't see SGA pop the same way. You have Jalen Williams who can set it up for them. You have all these role players who are phenomenal, who just come off the bench and knock down threes. They're great defensively. When you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, it's very much team basketball. But when you watch the Nuggets, it's heliocentric. It is just straight up that one star facilitating everything for that team. And I know that's more abstract, but when you watch it, it becomes obvious.
Yeah, and that's why, again, SGA, his scoring this season was incredible. And he did it at such an efficiency. Like, he shot 52% from the field on 32.7 points per game. I understand why he's going to win MVP. Yes. And again, I'm not going to tear him down to build Jokic up. It's just, in my opinion, when I watch the Thunder and I watch the Nuggets, I say Jokic is more important to his team. And he has the stats to back it up. And that's why I would have given the award to Jokic, SGA, any other season. If you don't have somebody averaging damn near a 30-point triple-double, I would have been SGA runs away with it. Because he was phenomenal this year. He also shows up defensively, which I do think matters. He averaged almost, I think, 2 steals a game this season with the block. He just doesn't move the ball and make that offense run as much as Jokic makes it run for the Denver Nuggets. And that's the difference for me. But again, you know, I understand why SGA is going to win. It's just, if you ask me, 10 out of 10 times, I'm giving it to Jokic.
And I know that it's a regular season award, the MVP is, but Jokic in these playoffs, second in points, first in rebounds, first in assists, first in steals, first in stocks. The guy's just, he's inevitable, and you can't do anything about him. Now, let me ask you this real quick. Going into the rest of the series, with what we saw.
This series. Okay.
With what we saw from Jokic in Game 1, and we talked about it yesterday, kind of replicatable because if they're going to throw Chet out there, or Isaiah Hartenstein, play him with one guy, he's going to get what he wants. How do they go about defending him the rest of this series?
You have to do what the Lakers did in
the
regular season.
You have to try to front him and just bother the hell out of
him.
And here's the other part of it. You can't – it's almost like every possession you need to try to throw a different look at him. You can't run the same look more than 3 times in a row or he's going to pick you apart.
You've got to keep Chet away from him. That's number one.
Why did they go with that off the top of the game?
Because he's bigger.
He's supposed to be there like, you know, rim protector. And against any other player in the NBA, he can hold up better. Yeah. But Jokic is different.
Jokic had like 7 turnovers when Chet was defending him at some point. But he also scored 40 on 50% shooting and 60% true shooting for the game. Like, he cooked him. There were a few moments where Chet had good moments against Jokic. But you've got to try to stop him and force another Nuggets player to beat you. If you die by Jamal Murray because you're fronting Jokic the whole time,
or Aaron Gordon back,
then that's what happens. That you have to just deal with that because you cannot let Chet or you cannot let Jokic go one on one with somebody.
Yes.
Them trying to do, okay, here's Chet, then here's Isaiah Hartenstein. Honestly, you've got to front him with somebody big. Either Hartenstein or Chet is fronting him the whole time. Have somebody on his back. Throw Caruso's little ass down there and put him on his legs. Just have him lean on him. I mean, that's what they have to do. You have to try to make him as uncomfortable as possible. And when he's off the floor, you have to hit the gas. If Jokic is off the floor, The Thunder starter should be in the game.
It honestly feels like Mark Daigneault should pull his team aside and say, okay, we're going to have these five defensive looks. We're going to rotate each possession, 1 through 5. Just keep going back. Because you cannot throw the same look at him for back-to-back possessions.
He's going to figure you out.
He's going to figure you out. Yeah. So you just have to throw a different look at him every single time. But I just, you know, limiting him, it's so hard to talk about because you're just picking your poison. Do you want him to score? Do you want him to facilitate? And either way, you're losing.
Now,
either way, you're losing that battle.
The issue for the Thunder, and again, like I still think that the Thunder probably win this series.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Just because I think they're the better
team.
I think they have the better team. They shot poorly in game one. Jalen Williams just completely disappeared, but he's kind of done that throughout his playoff life. So he's got to step up if the Thunder want to win. The only issue with doubling Jokic, which is what they're probably going to have to do, is they gave up a ton of rebounds without doing that. You've got a team rebound because you cannot give them 21 offensive rebounds because they're the type of team that punishes you when you do that. The Thunder punish you when you give them extra possessions, but so did the Denver Nuggets because if Jokic gets another possession, you better believe he's going to find a way to get that ball in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
You have got to make somebody else other than Nikola Jokic beat you. You have to try to disrupt him as much as possible. You got to play physical with him. He's a pretty good free throw shooter, but try to get him on the line. Don't let him shoot threes. They have to just throw everything
at Connor,
could
you imagine being Mark Daigneault? You're doing some chalk talk. You're watching the film, and you're like trying to teach your team or tell your team what to do to limit this guy. Like, could you imagine being in that position? Because you know that you're never going to actually hold him down from what he wants to do. He will find a way to beat you no matter what.
And I think one of the more underrated aspects of Jokic's game is how conditioned he actually is.
Yeah.
He gets better as the game goes on.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare to see that from a big.
Yep, for sure.
It is rare to see that from a big. Speaking of conditioning, speaking of health, the Warriors won game one against the Timberwolves 99-88. Despite losing Steph Curry after 13 minutes, Shams reported today that he has a grade 1 hamstring strain and will be out for game 2, and the Warriors will revisit his ability after. The Warriors still have a chance without Steph. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Overreaction. If he comes back, sure. But this is his first hamstring strain of his career, and hamstrings are fickle. It's hard to deal with, and he's 37 years old. I don't know when he's going to come back. He's at least out a week. We know that. So it means he'll likely miss game 2 and game 3. Could he be back for game 4? I don't know. I guess if the Warriors' defense junks up the game enough and Draymond Green can junk up the game enough, maybe they can win this series. But without Steph Curry, you can focus so centrally on Jimmy Butler and his scoring. And then outside of that, who is supplementing him? Maybe Jonathan Kuminga gets more minutes and he can do it, but we know that Steve Kerr's, you know, hesitant to play him. Brandon Podziemski's not consistent enough. Draymond Green, I know he threw it back to 2015 last night in that first half.
We don't like Draymond. He was awesome
great
last night.
Draymond especially was in that first half offensively. Night. And yeah. That's what something I've always respected about Draymond. He does what is called for in a game.
He was
Steph
incredible
went out,
last night.
He knocked down 4 of 5 threes, 16 points in the first half. He only finished with 18, but he was facilitating.
Buddy showed
the
up again
half.
Too.
Buddy Hield's gonna have to be really good the rest of the series, but we know that he's up and down with his shooting. He's very streaky. So I just look at it, and last night even, you know, I don't think Minnesota is going to continue to be this bad from three. They were 0 for 15 at half. They were 5 for 29 for the game. They actually, the last two games from three, 12 for 76. It's the worst two-game stretch in NBA playoff history from the three-point line. I just don't see that keeping up. Anthony Edwards only had 1 point at half, and he didn't make a field goal in the game until the 8:03 mark of the second half. I don't think that's something that'll hold. I guess that you could take some positivity if you're the Warriors, knowing Naz Reid is a little bit hobbled, but it's just hard for me to imagine this Warriors team consistently being able to keep up with, you know, at least a functioning offense of the Timberwolves. Last night they weren't functioning without Steph Curry. It's hard for me to imagine that.
It was the weirdest game because you just always felt like the Timberwolves were going to make the run to get themselves back into it, and they just never really did. They just never
did. They got
it
to about 10.
After that second quarter, when Golden State won that second quarter 26-11, it just felt like the game was kind of over. And the Timberwolves were – it was like they weren't playing with effort. They looked confused, discombobulated. They weren't playing together. It was a lot of ISO basketball, and they just could knock down a shot. Anthony Edwards was bad. Mike Conley, love you to death. Terrible last night.
It's
terrible.
It's over.
They were kind of hunting him defensively too, which was rough. Rudy Gobert, he wasn't very good. Jay McDaniels wasn't very good. Julius Randle was really bad last night from the field. I know his points look okay, but that's because he got to the free throw line. But good God, he was bad.
Can I ask you this too? Like last night, I want to give the Warriors credit. Defensively, they were good. But was it more Warriors good on defense or
Timberwolves shots
bad on offense? I thought it was more Timberwolves just terrible from the three-point line.
Draymond helped establish a tone in the first quarter that it was going to be a physical game. That being said, the Timberwolves missed a ton of open looks. They missed a ton of open looks. And it's very similar to kind of what we saw in the Lakers series. Like one of the games, like the game that the Lakers won was because the Timberwolves just missed wide open shots during that game. It's really going to come down to if the Timberwolves can just shoot 30% from three in a game, they're probably going to win the game because their defense will show up. They played well defensively last night. It's just on offense, they look completely lost. It was the weirdest thing to watch. It's just missing open shot after open shot after open shot and not playing team basketball.
Well, and I will give credit where credit's due to the Warriors. They played the Rockets, very defensive matchup, mm-hmm. back and forth. And last night they won with defense. They're winning in a different way. They're winning even with the disadvantages that they have on the defensive side of the ball. So shout out to them. I'm not going to completely count them out. I don't want people to think I'm saying that the Warriors are going to lose this series altogether. But without Steph Curry, it's hard to imagine them being able to do what they did last night and replicate what they did last night.
It's gonna be difficult for them because Steph is the type of player that can take over a game. Buddy Hield took over a game, but he did it because of the gravity that somebody like Steph Curry has. So is he going to be able to do that without
him? And now you have Jimmy Butler being your guy that takes all the gravity. Well, but he's also not much of a three-point shooter,
and
so you don't have to follow him around.
And to your point, Draymond, his first quarter performance was with Steph out there on the court.
Yes.
Once Steph was removed, all of a sudden Draymond
was 0 for 6,
yep,
I think,
yep,
or 0 for 5.
Yeah, he started 4 for 5, and he ended 4 for 10 from 3. He wasn't getting as many good looks when Steph wasn't out there. And that's why I kind of thought that the Timberwolves would eventually get themselves back into the game, but their effort just was not there. Their execution was not there. It was a weird game one. Mm-hmm. It was a very odd game one.
Yep, 100%. All right, now let's go ahead and transition. Showboats are going to be at home for three of their last four games. We bring on their head coach, Jim Turner, next. The Memphis Showboats sit at 1-5, but coming up this weekend, 2 p.m., they will be playing against the St. Louis Battlehawks right here in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Three of the last four games will be at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, and they have a nice little thing going on. Skipper's their new chief marketing officer, Connor. I don't know if you saw this. $2 beers, $2 hot dogs if you show up to the game. How about that? Shout out to Skipper. Shout out to Skipper, but also shout out to the head coach of your Memphis Showboats, Jim Turner. He joins now on X at @Jim_OL. Jim, how's it going?
Going well. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Another tough loss to Houston last week. How tough was it to, you know, you've lost two games by 2 points to them. What was the message to your team sort of after that game, sort of try to lift their spirits, that type of thing?
Yeah, so I think it's simple. Like, if you look at the game, right, you look at the overall game, I mean, we had 287 yards of offense, so they had 209.
Right.
And, you know, we all played them in every phase of the game, and we lost the game because of turnovers, and that's it. If you take the two turnovers out of there, we win that football game. And it's that simple. And so if you study the turnover battle in every football game in the history of this game, you'll find that the majority of times you lose the turnover battle, you lose the game. So that's the message is that easy. We got a good team and we're playing well, and we just got to continue on the course. We just got to fix that one piece of it. We got to force some turnovers on defense, and we got to stop turning it over on offense.
But overall, how did you think your team played last week? Well, how do you sort of grade them out when you look at that performance?
I thought they played well. You know, just like I just said, so the numbers, I think, tell a story that we did pretty well. Like, we ran the ball pretty damn well.
Right.
And, you know, like the first play of the game, we got called for the holding on the 72-yard or whatever it was, touchdown run that they called back. Other than that, I mean, you know, with the addition of 22 for us, Wes Hills, I mean, he's a huge get for us. We got two big backs with him and Prince. I thought we ran the ball really well. I thought our line played very well. And in general, we protected well, other than the one, you know, versus the double A's right, where we got hit off the edge. That one hurt us tremendously, obviously, because it was a 14-point swing, right? If we get out and score on that drive, which we didn't, but we gave up seven, so it's a huge play for them.
Mm-hmm. Now,
go ahead.
I apologize.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to get into this part of it. When you look at your passing offense and the changes you made, a change at OC, you go to Dresser win at quarterback. How have you guys been able to get that up and running as fast as you have with all the changes, with all the moving parts? Because it has been impressive how quick that turnaround happened.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, once we have direction like we have from Noel, you know, with his experience, I know that's all they really needed, right? You needed just one voice telling the offense, you know, how we're going to play and how it's going to go. And Noel's given us that one voice. So, you know, before Noel, there was it was different, right? So I was a big say in what was going on in the run game. And then there was a big say between the head coach and all that business, whatever was going on there. So all that's been corrected. And so we just have the one voice. You know, obviously I have a say as well, right? Because I've worked with Noel in the past, which is why he's here. So
right.
We worked well together as far as putting a run package and putting a pass protection and pass game package in there. So, and I think we have the players. I think we have the players to be able to do this, right? I mean, if you look at our quarterback, obviously Wynn's playing well right now. Our receivers, you know, you got Adams, you got the addition of Davis here. You got Loxley, you got Washington, you got Lassiter, you got Stoll will be back this week. So you really have some good players. And if we can distribute 8 players caught balls last week. So I'm very comfortable with the way that's going. We were able to move the ball down the field last week. We need to score more touchdowns and field goals. I know that. And we should be able to do that. With the personnel we have right now, we should be able to do that.
Curious, with the switchover, did you keep the same terminology? Did you keep the same play calls? How did that part of it go?
Yeah, no, we changed it.
Okay.
So the formations are basically almost the same. It's probably 50% the same and 50% different. But the play calls are all different. So to me, the players can learn whatever system you put in there. I mean, they can learn it fast. It has to come out like the play caller. It has to roll off of his tongue. So to me, it's more about the play caller. Like a lot of people think, well, the coach should adjust to the players. I'm like, no. Because the play caller, it has to be comfortable to him because it rolls off his tongue.
Yeah.
And when it rolls off his tongue, it's a better play.
Mm-hmm.
It just is because the quarterback hears it differently. If the quarterback hears him into the microphone and it's all, you know, juddered and split and he can't get it out, it's going to be a bad play.
Yep.
It's not going to work. It's not going to be good.
For sure. Now, last thing, and obviously a quick interview today, I just want to ask you, I know the circumstances with you taking over as head coach have not been perfect with Ken stepping away. How much have you enjoyed your time as the head coach thus far and just coaching this team in general?
Yeah, stepping away twice. So he stepped away twice. Then he came back and stepped away again. So that has been a challenge, right? So to stand in front of the team twice has been a challenge, right? Because the players, you know, to me, it's all about the players. And so don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoyed this position. So I'm happy that I'm in this position. And I take it seriously, right? So I do what I can to put the best product on the field every week. And, you know, there's a huge adjustment to all that, of course, right? Because you bring Noel in. There are other coaches in place that Ken hired. And so, you know, to try and get the coaches on offense to adjust to Noel and all that, and the players and all that. So to me, it's all been about the players. You have to be unselfish in this building right now. Because there's so many moving pieces, you know, so, but I've enjoyed the challenge. I've enjoyed, like, the last 2 weeks. The week before this, when the first time that Noel came in, when he got there, like, 48 hours before the Michigan game, the second Michigan game, you know, going into that game, there was a good chance we were going to lose that game, and I knew that because we just weren't together. But I was gonna take my lumps anyways. I said, Noel's calling the game, and he did. And, you know, we were still down by 4 points in the fourth quarter at one point. So we hung in there because we got a tough team and they battled. So, but the next two games, I've thoroughly enjoyed coaching because I knew we had a chance to win them. And we did win one of them. We lost the other one. But, you know, to beat Birmingham, obviously we have some talent. And obviously the players are doing some things right. And I think the coaches are doing some things right as well. I think our defense has been playing well throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And so it's all a matter of just putting it together. I've enjoyed the whole experience, and it's just a matter of continuing on this track and trying to put the product out there.
Well, how do you feel about sticking with it past this year?
Well, that's up to somebody else.
It's above your pay grade. I hear you.
You know, and so, like, I've been a position coach my whole career, and I felt like I would have done well at this job in other circumstances had I gone down this route earlier, but that didn't happen for me. So I'm happy to be here right now and just one day at a time, one game at a time, and see what happens.
I hear you, Jim. Well, good luck coming up on Sunday, and let's get a dub, and then maybe after the game we can get some $2 hot dogs and $2 beers for you.
Maybe during the game. Right?
I hear you. Well, Jim, you have a good one, man.
Can't wait to get there. We're really looking forward to this weekend, and I'll see you then.
Yes, sir. He is Jim Turner, head coach of the Memphis Showboats on X at @JimTurner_OL. But, that is a heck of a deal coming up this weekend. And I think I think they're holding it out for the rest of the home games this year, three of the last four games. $2 beers, $2 hot dogs. Shout out to Skipper, the mascot, handling that for us. But Jim, always so kind with his time. Appreciate him joining us. All right, now, this is a bit of an interesting wrinkle we have to throw in. We may get some federal intervention in college athletics. President Trump reportedly wants to get involved. We'll tell you how coming up next. That plague college athletics, the lack of guardrails around NIL, the transfer portal, the lack of guardrails there. We've been worrying about it for a long time. Now, will we have an answer with what I'm about to mention? I don't know. But Ross Dellinger, friend of the show from Yahoo Sports, reported today that President Donald Trump is making plans to create a presidential commission on college athletics. He calls it the first step in what could be a months-long endeavor for solutions to the issues ailing the college athletic ecosystem. Multiple sources, both in Congress and within college sports, spoke to Yahoo Sports under the condition of anonymity, as they were not authorized to speak about Trump's plans. Many college sports stakeholders have been briefed on the matter, but it is unclear, according to Dellinger, when an announcement could come. I'll be the immediate skeptic here. We need answers. I've always thought that the federal government, Congress, whoever it is, needs to step in to really help this thing along. The NCAA is not going to give any answers, and I don't know if you can get all of the powers that be in all these conferences to agree on one particular set of rules and guidelines. But I'll be the skeptic here. I personally think that we're looking at more political grandstanding. Donald Trump, Everybody knows my feelings on the guy, but in the end of the day, he does like to do what's popular. He does like to attack popular issues, and he likes to go about it that direction. To me, this seems like some political grandstanding. Now, I think if I'm taking it on a positive side, is I always have thought that the federal government was going to have to get involved to get this done. I will say, even though I'm skeptical, I think this is a fair step in the right direction into potentially getting that done. But we do know there's other things issuing this, other issues in this country right now. Even with this commission, I don't see anything being done in a very timely manner, as I have talked about in the past.
Yeah, and it looks like that the framework of any bill was expected to include three main concepts: a limited antitrust protection that in part codifies the House settlement to allow the NCAA and power conferences to enforce eligibility and transfer rules, as well as rules around the new revenue-sharing structure. Two would be a clause deeming athletes as students and not employees, with a possible sunset on the provision after a set number of years. And then three would be preemption of existing NIL state laws, many of which contradict the settlement and or NCAA rules.
Yes, this is what Dellinger wrote. The commission is expected to deeply examine the unwieldy landscape of college sports, including the frequency of player movement in the transfer portal, the unregulated booster compensation paid to athletes, the debate of college athlete employment, preserving the Olympic sports structure, the application of Title IX to school revenue sharing payments, and even conference membership makeup and conference television contracts. So, listen, I don't mind the step. I don't mind the commission. I feel like, again, the federal government has to get involved, but what will happen with this, we will let you know and sort of figure it out in the coming months, coming years. And nothing's going to happen fast, as nothing does happen fast when you're dealing with the federal government. Now, David Cobb joins next. I'm sure he's got some opinions on this, so stick around.